Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Last week, the Department of Justice charged 50 people in schemes to pay for entrance into top universities across the country. They called it the largest college admissions scam ever prosecuted, and those facing charges include some highly paid actresses, business leaders, other wealthy parents, as well as college officials, including coaches, one at Wake Forest. We've usually thought that getting into the school of your choice required one of two things: getting in on your own merit, meaning good grades, high SAT or ACT scores, extracurricular achievement, or being a high-performance athlete. The other way was to have a parent make a high-dollar donation to the school or have a family tradition of attendance there. Well, now we find this third way in, and it involves some prestigious institutions: Yale, Stanford, UCLA, Georgetown, to name just a few. Under this scheme, not only did some undeserving people win by gaining entrance to prestigious schools, others lost because their spot was taken by someone involved in this scheme, and some major questions have been raised. How widespread has this practice been? And will this end it? When it comes to getting into a school of your choice or a choice school, is the deck already stacked against those who play by the rules? We're going to spend the hour talking about that with three people who know the system well. Greg Zeiser is Vice President for Enrollment at Elon University. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Good to see you. He joins us in our studio with Lee Beer, an independent college admissions expert and president of College Admissions Strategies. That's a company that helps young people navigate the admissions process. Thank you for joining us again. Good to see you.
Glad to be back.
Let me turn your mic on. I'm sorry about that. I keep turning the wrong mics on this morning. And with us from the studios at the Brookings Institution is Andre Perry. He's a David M. Rubenstein Fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program there and a columnist writing weekly about education equity in something called the Hechinger Report. Thank you for joining us as well.
Hello from Washington, D.C.
Good to see you, or hear you. Hey, if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks as well. Let me start with you, Lee, because we've spoken many, many, many times on this program about helping kids get into college, to navigate the process, help advise the parents on what to expect and what their role in all of this should be. Did what happen last week with the Justice Department surprise you in any way, or were you aware of things like this going on? Because we've never talked about gaming the system.
No. It shocked me, honestly. We had heard of scandals in testing before, but we had never really heard about anything of this magnitude that goes on. You know, we talk about there being the front door of college admissions, which we hope everyone uses, which is applying basically on merit and your grades and your stats. And there was always the back door, but legal, where donations could be made that could possibly influence an acceptance. But this is a side door that is illegal and shameful and, made so many people so angry.
So you are a VP of enrollment for Elon University, Greg. Did this surprise you? Have you ever heard of anything like this? Have you been approached? Had anybody that you know of at Elon been approached for something like this?
It was absolutely a surprise and very, very disappointing. I can't help but believe that the people that I know in the field, the work that we do, my colleagues, are in this for the right reasons, and that is to make sure that we're doing the good work. We are building communities of students who will bring talent to our campuses. And the magnitude of this is really disappointing, really surprising, and really disheartening for, I think, the field of work that Lee and I do and my colleagues at campuses across the United States.
And Andre Perry, before working at the Brookings Institution and writing about this on a weekly basis from the national level, you were a dean, you were a professor, at one point associate professor of education leadership at the University of New Orleans. How rare or prevalent do you think this kind of activity is, whether it's somebody who gets caught because it's so pervasive in this one individual's company at least, or people trying to do this? How prevalent is this?
Well, I was not surprised at all.
Wow.
Because I was also a coach coming up the ranks as I trained in graduate schools. I coached track and field. And in my small role as an assistant coach, I would always have parents submit or recruit their students to me who clearly were not good athletes, who did not fall in the range, but because they were in my social network, they pursued to push their son or daughter into the college through the athletics department, because in athletics department they can recommend students for admissions offices, who oftentimes is rubber stamp the admittance. So I was absolutely not surprised, and more importantly, the odds have always been stacked against poor people, and always. And the admission process has always favored rich people. The founding of higher ed was basically to move white men into society, and from those foundings, poor folk have always had a harder time to get in because people feel entitled to certain universities and certain slots in higher ed.
We're going to come back to that entitlement and how the system has been stacked in one direction in a moment or two. William Singer is I read a letter to the editor this morning in the paper. William Singer has been described as the ringleader of this because it was his company that was involved in all this. But the letter to the editor points out that it's not him. He's not the ringleader. The parents were the ringleaders. If there was no market for this, he wouldn't have had any business. But he was allegedly the person who orchestrated this. His message, according to the New York Times, to the well-heeled parents he spoke with was simple and direct. He told them he knew the secret to getting into college. One individual paid him $5,000 a year for several years of monthly visits to dole out sage advice to send his daughter to college. The Associated Press reports that, quote, parents spent anywhere from $200,000 to $6.5 million to guarantee their children's admission. What in God's name is wrong with these people? $6.5 million to get your child into college? Really? You could buy them a life for that.
Absolutely. I think that there's blame to go around. I think that the colleges are partially responsible here, not the admissions offices per se, but the institutional priorities of trying to attract as many students as possible than to perhaps reject as many as possible. And I think that that is sort of the bedrock of why parents get so anxious about all this.
You're in this business. Have you ever heard of this? Have you ever heard of this guy before, William
No,
Singer?
No, I've not.
Because some of the parents that he dealt with claim to have been shocked by last week's news, that they knew nothing about this. So was he, do you think, just targeting specific, really high-dollar people with these offers, or people that hired him and he recognized that their children had no academic talent, so therefore I can milk the cow here a little bit. Do you think that's what happened there?
I absolutely. I think he took advantage of wealthy people who really cared about the sticker on their car.
You do this for a living. This is what you do. We've talked about this many times.
Mm-hmm.
The College Admission Strategies is your company. What exactly do you do? And people like you, what do you do?
So I help families navigate the process. We start whenever families determine they're ready to do this. Some families start younger than others. And we do everything from helping them select courses for the next year so that their transcript appears to have as much rigor as the student can handle, but not too much. And when it's appropriate, we talk about college and we talk about fit, right? What schools represent the best fit for that student? And then we talk about the applications.
One of the things that I only have a minute left here, but one of the things that Mr. Singer is accused of is helping young people fabricate their resumes, fabricate their what did you
activities.
Just call it? Your activities.
Mm-hmm.
Do universities like Elon? Do they have a way of seeing through that?
I think the very best we can do is evaluate what is being presented to us and consider what's realistic. And there are times when we'll look at a transcript and say, how is that possible? And sort of try to delve into that by asking the student, tell us a little bit more about how you're doing this, how you're presenting yourself, and what are your priorities?
So they'll have to verbally back up what is
in some cases, yes, when we meet them, when we have the opportunity to meet them.
We're going to talk more about this, and I really want to get into what Andre Perry has to say about this inequity in the system that's been built into the system since the very beginning. We'll do that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the scandal that broke last week revolving around college admissions and involving a lot of high-profile people, wealthy people, college coaches, including one at Wake Forest. And we're talking about this with Lee Bierer, president of College Admissions Strategies. He's a local person who helps young people get into college legitimately. Greg Zeiser is Vice President of Enrollment at Elon University. Both of them are in our studio. And joining us from a studio at the Brookings Institution in Washington is Andre Perry, the David M. Rubenstein Fellow with the Metropolitan Policy Program there.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. One of the things that the central figure in this scandal, William Singer, allegedly was able to do was fake exam scores, SAT. It's been a long time since I've taken the SAT, but I don't know how you do that. The story that I read about this says that he bribed proctors to help students. How? You're in a room with 35, 40 people, at least you were when I took the SAT, and there was a person at the front of the room. How does a proctor go in and help you help you cheat?
He brought people to a different room. So in other words, in many cases I've heard that they faked learning disabilities so that they would not have to take the test with everyone else, and they would take it in a separate space. And in some cases, I was told that they had jotted down their responses, but not bubbling in the sheets, and then brought their sheets to the proctor. And then the proctor only put in, you know, the correct responses.
So not only are people hurt by this, because people who don't deserve that slot in the college take a slot that somebody else who deserved it didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
But people like who have legitimate learning disabilities are now, we're now looking at them going, do you really have a learning disability, or are you just trying to cheat the system? Another way people have lost in all of this.
Yeah.
Shameful.
Andre, something else in this scandal has laid bare is the tremendous pressure to get your child into the right school. How widespread is this phenomenon in, and really, is it legitimate, or are the parents putting that pressure on themselves?
Yes, the parents are. There's this idea that in order to be good, a university or college has to be elite. And being elite has really translated into being wealthy. This case really lays bare that rich people are not smarter. Yes, they can hire tutors. They can hire companies to make a case for them. They can get into better high schools and primary schools, but they are not smarter. But we believe that there should be a gated community of sorts in colleges and universities, and that is what makes them good. And it could not be further from the truth.
But if you get into Harvard, or you get into Yale or some of these other high-profile, elite, so-called elite colleges, is it not true that you are fairly set for life, not just because of what you may learn there, because you may not learn very much there at all. But because of the patina that those schools have and the connections you make, are you not set?
But and this is what's sad about the entire case. Yes, you may be set because there are social connections that essentially reinforce inequality throughout the system. If you get in, you are not necessarily expected to be the smartest, but you are expected to protect the elite by participating in this. Now, I went to a liberal arts school that is considered a top-tier liberal arts school. I think I got a wonderful education. But we've got to stop this notion that if you get a certain percentage of students with high ACT or SAT scores, you're a better institution. It is fundamentally not true in the notion of it does not reflect the quality of your instructors, the quality of your programs, the how you uplift people in their social status. We are essentially educating our social relatives, and it doesn't take a lot to do that.
Would it be accurate to say that if you don't get into Harvard, but you get into Elon, just I'm not going to pick on Elon, but you're sitting in front of me here, that if you apply yourself, you pick the right major that you have an aptitude for and apply yourself in that major, that you can do as well as you could have if you'd done the same thing at Harvard?
I believe so. I believe that, this is about, we talk a lot about fit in the university admissions world. There are students who could get into Harvard and students who do apply to Harvard who go elsewhere and are, as successful as they would be anywhere, largely because of applying themselves.
Do parents understand that, or is it hard to fight the impression that you must get into Duke, Princeton, Yale, Harvard?
I would say based on what's happened in the last week, some parents do not understand that. And that's part of the work that we do, is we try to instill in families the understanding that, there's a right place for everybody.
But so in this situation, what was revealed last week, do you think the parents were legitimately anxiety-ridden over getting their children into the right schools because it looked good or because it would help them for life? Or do you think they did it just because they could? They had the means to make it happen?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I don't know for sure. Each individual's got a different situation, right. But I can't imagine the pressure that they must feel for their student.
But and they're that's rich already.
They are.
So what's the point? I mean, many of these people probably have money that they cannot spend in their lifetimes. Why do they feel such a...
It's the cocktail party conversation.
It's the bragging rights.
Yeah, the bragging rights, the sticker on the car. It's all the hype that goes along with this. I mean, one of the, I think it was Lori Loughlin's daughter, who had a YouTube video saying she didn't really want to go to school anyway.
We'll be talking about that, too, in a second. Yeah. I want to get back to this SAT thing for just a second or two. We talked a little bit about how these scores could be manipulated, but at what point? Because a lot of schools, I think UNC, Chapel Hill, does not reveal how they regard SAT scores or what their top score, what their floor is. They don't reveal that information. So if you don't know what it takes to get into a school, how do you know how to manipulate the SAT?
Well, there's some truth to what you're saying. There's not a you must score a minimum of this to be considered, but all schools publish what is referred to as the middle 50%, which means that 25% of their students scored above a certain score, 25% scored below the lowest score, and 50% of their accepted students scored in that middle 50. And that's public.
But some schools are getting away from even looking, aren't they, at SATs?
Yeah. Yeah.
So do they publicize that they don't look, that they don't care?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. A lot of the growing number of schools that are SAT or test optional is significant.
At what level? What kinds of schools don't look anymore?
Across the board.
Oh.
I mean, there are more.
Wake Forest doesn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the most prominent schools that are doing this are already considered elite. So they don't have to, they don't need to show their test scores. Once once it is, the perception is set that you are an elite school, you will do whatever it takes to get into that school. And that's part of the problem, mm-hmm. that we've created this perverse incentive, not around wanting to educate people and to move society, but to continue this sort of social obsession with being elite.
Wow. Let's get back to something you were talking about a second ago, Lee, because we've talked many times about what you do in terms of helping kids get into school, helping parents help their children to make their dreams come true. We have talked about how sometimes those dreams don't match up with reality, and you try to guide them to something other than what they're dreaming because the dream is not going to come true. We've talked about in past appearances on this program how you talk to parents about, so what they don't get into Harvard? So what? Try this. And if you don't get your first five schools, if you get the sixth, you'll be okay. Life will be okay. We've talked about all that. But you just brought up something very interesting. There are some kids who don't have those dreams. And in the case of this one individual, she was on social media saying, I don't care about school. And she got in. So what's that all about? If the kid doesn't care, why are they spending millions of dollars to get their kid into the school?
I really think it's this pressure on the parents to...
What's worse, not getting in or flunking out?
In the short term, for some of these families, it's probably the not getting in, unfortunately. But, you know, the prestige pull is big.
Since you counsel kids, mm-hmm. and parents, have you had a situation where you have been hired by the parent to help the child and the child confides in you, they don't want to go to college? They don't want to go. Has that ever happened to you?
I'm actually working with one family right now. The student is just a sophomore.
Okay.
So we're putting the whole process on hold until they sort of get through their sophomore year, and then we're going to regroup in, 6 to 8 months and see if they feel differently. But that's absolutely fine. Or a gap year is a wonderful option.
So you don't encourage them to do what their parents want. You tell the parents your child doesn't want to go to school. Here's what we should do.
Oh,
that's how
for
you
sure.
approach it.
Yes.
One way that William Singer, the central character in this, was able to accomplish what he did for the children of well-heeled parents was to fabricate a number of things, student biographies among them, to bribe test monitors and also to influence coaches, athletic coaches. And one of the coaches caught up with this was a coach at Wake Forest. He and others convinced admissions officials at their schools that these students were top athletes when, in fact, some of them didn't even play in the sports. They didn't play any athletics at all in some cases. Does no one check at these schools beyond the coach's recommendation, Greg?
I think they do. I think these are unusual cases. I mean, I think for the most part, there's a really strong relationship and should be a strong relationship between the athletics and the admissions office. I know we have a process in place. I am confident that a lot of other schools do as well. Again, these are, unfortunately, they're isolated situations. I believe they're isolated situations that are not prevalent throughout the industry. But as Andre has said, as a coach, I've not had that experience. But I think that for the most part, you'll find that schools do have systems in place that mitigate the potential for this kind of thing to happen as best they can.
But we also just, let's be clear that if you are a soccer coach, you have a certain number of slots that you're given. And there's a range, typically, not in all institutions, there's a range in academic achievement levels that you can select from, and you pass that recommendation on to the admissions office. And they generally rubber stamp it unless it's an egregious issue. Now, if you are on the sailing team, I mean, let's be honest. There's no real athletic record that you can reference to. In things like track and field, you can go back to track meet records. In basketball, you can look at championships. You can see performance. But if you are on the water polo team, really, can you check? And so I'm not surprised, again, that many of the sports that the athletes were found not to even compete were in areas where it's just hard to check if there's a record of performance.
You would notice if the football guy you recruited
That's
couldn't
right.
play well or didn't show up and play at all. You
That's
wouldn't
right.
notice in field hockey or maybe track and field. And as you point out, the Chronicle of Higher Education says it's fairly common for selective institutions to grant a specific number of slots mm-hmm. to the athletic department each year. But if the kids don't play or they get there and they're so bad that the coach chooses not to use them and drops them, doesn't the admissions office notice? Doesn't the school notice?
No, but I just want to, it's particularly at small colleges and small universities, coaches are an extension of the admissions office. If you have a school of 2,000 people and you're recruiting 10 to 20 kids, that's a significant percentage of the freshman class. And so these coaches are encouraged to go out and find students. And you know, and this is anecdotal, but I have seen it. When general enrollment is down, there's much more pressure on coaches. And so you can have graft when there's an open opportunity to recruit students.
Andre Perry is the David M. Rubenstein Fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about affirmative action and the need for it and the need that is underlined by what we just witnessed happening last week. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about the scandal that broke last week where there's fairly well-heeled parents cooperated with a guy named William Singer and a company, I think, on the West Coast. I'm not sure where the company is located, but people spending hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars with this guy to get their kids into college illegitimately. We're talking about this with Greg Zeiser, Vice President of Enrollment at Elon University, Lee Bierer, President of College Admission Strategies, a company that does precisely, well, not precisely, does...
No.
She helps kids get into college, but legitimately so. And Andre Perry is here with the Brookings Institution as well. Andre, you said something early in the program that I want to come back to. Because you said that this is essentially, and you've written that this is what happened last week. It's indicative of the reality that America has never had a merit-based system for college attendance, that it's always been rigged for the wealthy, and that the high-flying corruption alleged in this recent case should put a spotlight on the current efforts to dismantle affirmative action. There's two things there, the merit-based myth and the drive now to say that we don't need affirmative action anymore, and they're working together.
Yeah, there's this narrative that's existed since affirmative action came about in the famous Bakke decision, that precious seats are being taken away by black people or undeserving low-income people because of this need to better society. And it's that fear that has driven a lot of the support for the efforts to end affirmative action. But what this entire scandal makes absolutely clear is that it's the wealthy who are hoarding spots. I mean, just on this notion that black athletes who, by the way, do add value to campuses athletically and academically. But in this case, you had students who never competed taking spots. And this also, I think, takes the lid off of all the legal means people have at their disposal to game the system, so to speak, to give them an advantage. So, I say in my piece, I really don't know the difference of giving a $2 million contribution or bribing someone for a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Well, this giving a contribution has been going on for a long time.
Absolutely.
Jared Kushner attended Harvard University, and prior to his attendance, and there may be no connection here, But prior to his attendance, his father donated millions of dollars to Harvard University. And this is not the only time this has happened. A lot of wealthy people have done this over time. Should we consider these things to be fair and normal, or is it just a glaring example of wealth and privilege short-circuiting a system in place for everybody else who doesn't have the means to do that?
Well, it's not fair. Let's be clear, and I encourage everyone
But if you're an institution and somebody's offering you $20 million, that's a lot of money.
And you're building an engineering building that will benefit hundreds
right.
and then thousands of students down the road.
Should you say no to that money? Because you look on the one hand, here's this big check. On the other hand, here's an application
If they're building creating a building that's going to increase the number of folks who will continue this process, it's not worth it. That we've forgotten a very basic principle of the charter between higher education and society. Yes, we are supposed to prepare the workforce. Yes, we're supposed to advance art and culture. But we're also supposed to support a democracy. And what we're doing is we're creating enclaves of elite folks who are essentially separating themselves from the rest of America. Higher education has to uphold some pretty lofty standards. And giving money essentially to get people who are not meeting their own standards is patently wrong, immoral. It may be legal. It may be legal, but it's patently immoral.
Greg Sizer, you're at Elon University. How does Elon, how do colleges and universities balance these big donations with the fact that maybe their child wants to go there, or even the fact that a child wants to go to a school and their father went there, and their grandfather went there, and their great-grandfather went there? Do they get preferential treatment? Should they? How do you balance it?
One thing I want to say is that we're talking about the STEM building, for example, and building donations. Oftentimes, we refer to these things as institutional priorities. What are the goals of an institution? The student has to be admissible. They have to be able to demonstrate that they can be successful there. So regardless of what the priorities are, from an admission standpoint, from a success standpoint, from ensuring that the student will at least be successful on campus, they have to demonstrate that in the admissions process. So fundamentally, regardless.
But if I have $25 million to give Elon University and I want my daughter to get into Elon University next year, is she going to have a leg up because I gave you $25 million? Are you going to tell me no because she doesn't meet the academic standards, or her SAT scores are too low, or her resume is not as broad or as impressive as this student over here who's just paying tuition, or who in fact may be on student loans or even getting academic help from your institution?
I think it would depend on the selectivity of a school, frankly. I mean, I can't
Who
speak for other schools.
That?
Admission offices, policies that are created for student success.
Are there immobile, incontrovertible standards at any university, or are they all moldable and bendable depending upon the situation?
I can't speak for all the universities. There are 3,500 colleges and universities in the United States alone. Mm-hmm. I would just say that students should be admitted. Colleges and universities admit a wide range of students, and if a student is within that range, then admission is an opportunity.
But what this case shows is that you can not be prepared and buy your way in and actually graduate and do well, that many of the admission standards are not credible. They're not a predictor of how you will do well. And this case proves that. We have thousands of graduates who went to the top universities, but they purchased their way in, and they've gotten out, which shows you that when you're trying to deny low-income kids admission based on some faulty standard, we're hurting the ability to advance a democracy. And that's what my problem is with this entire case, is that it's not just Harvard. Look at the institutions I went to. They are a majority white, majority high income. All these schools that say they're good, they're not allowing for the kind of diversity that should actually happen.
You may have just answered my next question, but let me ask it anyway. And that is, and it's kind of a devil's advocate question, unless it is a public university that we're talking about, why shouldn't those who can't afford it use their money and their privilege to secure admission for their child? It would be a pay-to-play scheme, but why shouldn't that be the case at a private school?
No, but I think that's what is the case. I mean, I think what I write about often is that we have this facade as if this is not going on in legal and illegal means, that many of our top universities are really enclaves for the rich people who are willing to do that.
If you can buy your way in, and this scandal proves that you can you buy your way out? You get in, you don't study, you don't go to class, you got D's, you got F's, you also get a diploma.
Well, I think the colleges want kids to graduate, right? So I think there are majors that are, quote, easier to get out. You probably don't want to be a physics major.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if you're a multimillion-dollar parent, and you have been able to, through this other scheme, buy your way in, or maybe you didn't buy your way in, but your kid isn't doing so good, can you buy them out? Can you bribe teachers?
That sounds naive, Andre.
So there's no incidence that you know of that happening.
But there is a commonly said phrase, particularly among liberal arts institutions, you pay to stay. And it's not that they're paying professors or anything like that, but there is financial incentives for private universities to do everything to retain students. And so, but at a public university where there's, in some cases, and it's not as much the case anymore, but there's long lines, you don't have to put the attention on retaining students. They come in, if they make it, they make it. If they don't, they don't. But if you go to an elite liberal arts institution, you're paying $50,000, $60,000 a year. They want that income to keep coming in. And so this notion of pay to stay, it's not outright bribery, but you are getting increased attention to stay in the system.
At Wake Forest, the head of the university told reporters that federal prosecutors consider the universities involved in this victims in the admission scandal. And it should be pointed out that no schools are targeted by this investigation, only the individuals who bought their way in and the guy running it and some coaches. The schools themselves are considered to be a victim. But to be a victim, it seems to be, would seem to indicate that Wake Forest and some of the other schools had no defenses against this kind of manipulation. Could that be true, and would it be possible to establish them, these defenses?
Clearly it is true, given the circumstances, and that's what's so surprising about
this. Or were
they
just turning a blind eye to it, because it happens all the time?
I would not know. I can't imagine that, again, because of the colleagues that I know and the work that we do. But clearly this shows some vulnerabilities.
So going forward, first of all, what kind of shadow does this cast on people who do what you do, companies that do what your company does? What kind of a shadow does it cast on you? Are you a victim here, Lee?
Well, I think it's fairly easy to distinguish yourself from the array of cheating and bribery and the scandal that went on here. So I think that most of the people who do what I do feel that they are working with public school kids who have so few counselors to students that they need their help, right? As opposed to, you know, the super rich who can pay their way to get in.
So I'm sure the colleges and universities in the shadow of this are doing some navel gazing, some self-examination. Andre, what needs to happen? What has to happen going forward to make sure this doesn't happen again, and that these universities can steel themselves so they're not victims going forward?
We have to put less emphasis on test scores and less emphasis on exclusivity. And that's going to be hard to do in higher education because we've sort of built this idea that we want the most capable, the most brilliant students. We want people who have proven themselves already. And this society now needs, we need for you to show that you can uplift people from low income status to be able to get a job that will afford them a high income. If we can create a system that shows outputs instead of inputs, then we'll be better off. But right now, the colleges and universities are incentivized to uphold these reputations around exclusivity that is really putting or maintaining the perverse incentives that have always existed in higher education.
And Andre Perry, you get the last word because we're out of time. Andre Perry with the Brookings Institution, Lee Bierer, President of College Admission Strategies, Greg Zeiser, Vice President of Enrollment at Elon University. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.